Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sight and Vision, the Disability Senior Talk Radio Show, a show about disability rights, disability services, and your disability dollar. Your voice, an advocate, voice your concern, voice your impression, but please let us know that you need to be heard. Good afternoon, I would say, our listening audience. Sight and Vision is presenting the Disability Deliverance, and that's a show about persons with disability in the Bible and how God used them to glorify His name. And I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor. Although I've been blind for more than 50 years, every morning I wake, I feel blessed and highly favored, and I know God is good. Greetings, and how are you today, Miss Renee?
Well, Reverend Ray, I am great. Thank you for asking me. I just am trying to figure out where the month of July went. It seemed like we were just celebrating the 4th of July, and now it's the 30th of July.
Well, you know, it must be a truism that as you get older, time flies. Because I'm telling you, when I was a kid, I was just wondering, when is the next day going to come? I was in the bank today, and the lady said, what? It's the 30th of July? And I say, it looks like we got more month than Monday. But anyway, Ms. Renee, who is our guest, and what is our lineup for today?
Well, when we think of puppets, we often think of children, but our guest, Leonard Corbin, dispels that thinking by bridging the generation gap with his puppet, Ebony Sunshine.
Wow, that sounds interesting. And, you know, Ms. Renee, today we was going to look at the scripture about Jesus healing with his hand and on the Sabbath. And we was looking at that to be a really bang up, knock down, drag out discussion, and it's in three of the Gospels, and that is other than John. For some reason, it's not in John, but it is in Luke, it is in Matthew, and it is in Mark. But because we was able to finally find a puppeteer to talk about puppetry and what the ministry is that we didn't have over the last couple of years. I said we had some emails and texts about what is the puppet ministry at church. They didn't know what the puppets was doing. So we was able to corral to someone that was gracious enough to come on Disability Deliverance and talk about puppets. So Brother Leonard Corbin, thank you so much for coming on our show. Now, we usually tell people when they are maiden voyages, the first time we open the door, let them in, put their coat up, offer them a chairs, get a couple drinks for them. But after the first show, they're just like family. They come in on their own. They sit down. They kick their shoes off and all. So we appreciate you being our special guest. And how are you today?
I'm doing fine, Reverend Reddick Razor. I want to thank you for inviting me to be on your show today.
Oh, well, thank you. And we usually have three things that we try to do on this show. Is one, we try to inform people, we try to bring inspiration, and we definitely have a whole lot of entertainment. That's just the nature of us. We like to make it fun. So, Brother Corbin, would you tell us a little? I know you're a native Washington. Yeah. So would you tell us a little bit of, give us a little oral biography of you, a little bit about your growing up and family and all, and then we'll work up to when you became a puppet master.
So I am the middle child of seven children born to my parents. And the middle child has always been one, and my studying of the middle child is one who's always striving for attention. Because he's caught in the middle, the oldest child usually gets the attention because they're the oldest, and the baby child usually gets it because they're the youngest. But that middle child is always striving for attention. And the way they usually get attention is by acting out.
And that's
what I did. I believe I got more whoopings than anybody in the family.
Do you believe you was acting out because you understood you was a middle child, or that was just some nature in you, Brother Corbin?
I believe it was the nature in me. I didn't learn about that until I got older and read up on the middle child. But yeah, I think that was just my nature. I wasn't doing it on purpose.
Okay, well, you know, if you're a native Washingtonian, you know Washingtonians, you know, they have a rep, not just in this area, which we in the DMV, most of you all know that, our listening audience. And when you, and when I travel, and I will say I'm from D.C., it's like, uh-uh, it's something about them people. So, Brother Corbin, do you find that to be so that the D.C., if you're from D.C. or grew up in D.C., there's just some connection to you in terms of toughness or just a different type of brother?
Well, I remember my first year in college when I was in West Virginia. And everybody kind of pulled to me or drew from me once they learned that I was from D.C. Now, it had a lot of negative connotations. Some people thought that I knew where I had all the drugs. But at that time, I was a Christian, so, you know, I had to let them know quickly, I don't have any drugs to give you.
Wow. Well, now, what was your growing up like, and what part of D.C. did you live in? Because they always say that Southeast. So what was your growing up like, and what part of the city did you grow up in?
Now, you can always tell whether they grew up in Southeast by the way they say it. It's Southeast. And if you don't say it right, you know that you ain't from Southeast.
That's right.
So I grew up in Southeast right in about the 3600 block of Nicholas Avenue. Black family to move in our neighborhood in 100 block of Trenton Place Southeast. We were the first black family to move in that neighborhood in 1962.
Wow. Okay. I would be remiss in asking this for our listening audience, because we all heard nationwide and worldwide, and people. You know, our Washington news is our local news, but it's the nation's national news. And people always ask me in my travels and doing presentations and all, always about the change in Washington, D.C. And let me ask you, since you're a native Washingtonian and you're still in this area, the changes that we went from Chocolate City to, I don't even know if we vanilla chocolate now. But just give a little observation of your, and you looking at the city now, D.C. now, the way it is now from the days of all the black people standing in line to go in Ben's Chili Bowl, and you don't see that many black people. You see more Caucasians now. And some of the changes, what is your impression of the change of the city that would just jump out to you, Brother Corbin?
So as I previously mentioned, how when we moved into our neighborhood, we were the first black family. It's kind of like the city is reverting back to where it was when we moved in Southeast.
Wow.
You see a lot of back then, you know, the alleyways in Washington, D.C. has a lot of alleys. The alleys were immaculate when we moved in the Southeast. And when, as the years went by, they were automobiles, abandoned automobiles, and all kinds of refuge in the alleys and whatnot and all. But the one thing that I'm noticing about the city is that it is, I think they call it gentrification. It is reverting back. You see a lot of Caucasians out in the neighborhood walking their dogs and jogging and biking and in a stroller with their babies and whatnot. When you didn't see that for years, it's not Chocolate City anymore.
And you know, no, Corbin, no. One of the things that I have observed, PBS has been doing a special, and they do different decades of Washington, D.C. So it's the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, up to the 90s is what I've seen. And just as you have observed, the changes are amazing. When I came to Washington, I came in the mid-70s, I couldn't believe that this little sort of country town-like was the nation's capital. I mean, there was, like, not a real downtown. You know, it had just a few stores. I thought 14th Street was the main drag. And the Washington that you knew in the 60s and the Washington that is coming into play now – is a totally different. It's a totally different animal. You're right. The observation is very telling.
There are areas in downtown that I go by, I wouldn't even recognize them. I mean, I live in Fort Washington now, but it's the rare occasion when I go into D.C.
Wow.
Yeah. You don't know it. Now, you mentioned you were in West Virginia when you went to college. What college did you attend?
West Virginia Tech. That's in Montgomery, West Virginia. It's actually West Virginia University now. It's a part of it's been amalgamated into the West Virginia University system. But it was West Virginia Tech I was attending it in Montgomery.
Now, wait a minute. Okay. That became part of the Mountaineers?
Yes.
Oh, with Sam Huff and all them people went to. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
oh, what did you major in, and how did you get drug out to West Virginia?
So at the time I was in Job Corps.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was in Job Corps in Washington, D.C., and I graduated and got the opportunity to go to school that Job Corps would pay for 2 years. And my major was printing and publication, and that was the only school in the choices where you had choices that you could pick from schools all over the country. And that was the only school that had the major that I was interested in. But they said at the time that if you graduated with a degree from that school in printing and publication, you would get a job like that.
Wow. So now, were you interested, Brother Corbin, in the profession, or was you interested in the money?
Well, I was interested in the profession, but I was looking at the money, too.
Because I would think back in those days, being a printer was in pretty good demand. I mean, we didn't have all this technology we have today. So did you pursue that as a profession, or once you got into school, you started running around, cutting up, hurrying on, having a good time, and change your mind?
Well, I pursued it to the degree that I could. I actually got my call to the ministry when I was in school. And long story short, God told me to go home after I answered the call to the ministry, and I didn't want to go home because I was going to be the next, not Barry Gordy, the Ebony Magazine is Johnson, right?
Oh, Johnson.
Yes,
Johnson.
Oh.
So God and I was mad with God because I didn't want to go home, and he told me to go home. And so he said that I'm going to make it so you don't have any other choice but to go home. He said, first of all, your friends are going to turn their back.
Hold that one moment, Brother Corbin. When we hear the music there, that means Reverend Ray got to go in his pocket and pay some bills and pay some people.
Okay.
And people like Miss Renee at our staff meeting want to talk about raises and stuff. So we're going to bump out and come right back on the other side of the break. And we're going to pick up hearing about how the Lord dragged you or made you understand that you need to work for him. Miss Renee.
All right. You are listening to Sight and Vision, Disability, and Senior Talk Radio. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. And back over to Reverend Ray and our guest, Brother Leonard Corbin.
All righty. And this is Sight and Vision Radio Talk Show that is presenting Disability Deliverance Ministry, and today we're talking about, as many of you have asked us, what is puppet ministry, and we are going to get to that, but we want to get to know the person sometime. A lot of these things, I'm telling you one thing about having all these Alexas, you say the key word and they will start talking to you. And so we do have a special guest, Brother Lennon Corbin, that has a puppet ministry, and we're going to discuss that in a moment. But as I say, you can go online now, boy, and find out about anything. So we like to get to know the person and find out why did they get in these different professions and these different venues and stuff like that. So we're back to Brother Corbin. So Brother Corbin, you were saying that's when you met the Lord was at, which is an interesting place, at college. So tell us, tell us how that came about.
So like I said, I had gotten my call, and the Lord told me he wanted me to go home. And at that time, I told the Lord, no, I'm not going home. And the thing about it is the Lord knows us. And so his response, even before I said no, he said, and if you don't do it, because he knew me and he knew I wasn't going to do it. So he said, and if you don't do it, this is what's going to happen. First, all your friends are going to turn their back on you. And then your grades are going to suffer. And then you will have no choice but to go home. So, one by one, all my friends, we got in little silly arguments and whatnot, and they stopped talking to me or I stopped talking to them. And, you know, I said it wasn't bothering me, but it was bothering me, and it affected my grades, and my grades started going down. Now, at the time that my grades started going down, I was on the good dean's list. You know, we got two lists, right?
Yeah.
I was on the good one. And they usually don't say anything when your grades start going down. They, you know, but my advisor called me into his office, and he said, I don't know what it is, but you need to go home, and you need to go home right now. And he signed a piece of paper dismissing me from school so I could go home. And I said, right after I got out of his office, okay, Lord, I get it, I'm going home.
Well, at least you didn't have to run away from Nineveh. I mean,
I guess that was my Nineveh.
That was your Nineveh, absolutely.
Oh, okay. And what was your calling? I mean, your calling was to come to the Lord, but was he specific in being an evangelist, being a proclaimer, pastoring a church? What did you come to understand, and who was the first person you went to say, hey, I surrender to the Lord, and this is what I'm going to do?
So I realized what he wanted me to do while I was in West Virginia. It wasn't a Christian college, but there were a lot of Christians there. And he put me in contact with a lot of Christians, and one was Marvin Grayson. kept talking to me about Kenneth Hagin. And so when I decided that I was going to obey the Lord told me that I needed to go and study to show myself approved to God. And so the Lord convinced me that I should go to Kenneth Hagin School, which is in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. But me again, and that has been a thing with me and God. I don't always like to obey the first time He tells me stuff. So I wanted to go to Oral Roberts University, which is also in Oklahoma.
Yeah, okay, right.
And so I decided with my back then she was my girlfriend, but now she's my wife. We decided that we were going to write two preachers, Fred Price and Kenneth Copeland, and ask them which school should I go to. Now, and both of them wrote back, and both of them said without question that I should go to Kenneth Hagin's school in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that is interesting. Wow. And so in doing that is now here again, you being the third child and saying like you just gonna do what you want to do. Did you do that, or what did you and your future wife decide to do?
What was that? I'm sorry.
What did you and your future wife decide to do after hearing from those two ministers?
I ended up going to Oklahoma to go to Rhema. That's Kenneth Hagin School.
And what was that experience for a black, urban, middle city kid coming from D.C., going to the Midwest, and God knows during that time, there wasn't Jim Crow, but it was the closest thing to it. What was your experience like, and how long did you stay there?
I was there for 2 years. The very first time that I arrived in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Now, I didn't do like normal people do. God said, go, I went. I didn't really do any preparation. I didn't have a place to stay when I got there. I just went. God said, go, and I went. And the first, it dawned on me when I arrived in the Tulsa, Oklahoma bus station at 4 o'clock in the a.m., I didn't have a place. So Tulsa, Oklahoma is not like Washington, D.C., where you can walk outside and hail a cab. Their cabs didn't start running until 7 o'clock in the morning, so I had 3 hours to kill. So I realized that the school was a little ways away. It was in the suburbs of Tulsa, Oklahoma. So I put my luggage in a locker, and I said I'll come back and get it after I find a place. I caught a cab to Broken Arrow. I got in class, and when class let out, I had 2 stacks of books knee high and didn't have a place to go. And so I walked around and couldn't find a place, going here and there, dragging them books behind me. The school had a park inside, and I said, and a bench. I said, well, I'll sleep on this bench if nothing else. And just as I said that, I noticed a sign that said, no sleeping in park. So I went back inside the school, and they had this bulletin board where they had rooms and stuff that people could go to. I checked out a room, dragging all my books behind me, and nobody wanted to hire me because you had to have a car, and I didn't have a car. So nobody wanted to give me a place to rent, and I didn't have a car, and I didn't have a job. So I went back inside the school, and I found a place to sit, and I told the God, you told me to come here. I'm not moving out of this spot until you do something. And I guess it hadn't been 5 minutes went by before a gentleman came by and sat down on the couch with me, and we started talking, and eventually he asked me where was I staying. I said, right here in this spot right here. You don't have a place. I said, no. And another long story short, he ended up taking me to his house that he was renting with somebody, and that's where I ended up staying my first year in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Now, was this gentleman, Brother Corbin, white or black?
He was white, yeah.
Wow. And what was the racial, dynamics and the racial mix at that time in Oklahoma? I can imagine probably for one every 100,000 white people, it probably was two black. But what was the demographic as you saw it?
It was a predominantly white school, and so I had gotten an adjustment from that by going to West Virginia because it was a predominantly white school. So,
yeah.
So I was able to make the adjustment from that by being at West Virginia Tech. But then too, and I know that this may not be a big thing, but this was a Christian school, so everybody who was there was at least professing to be a Christian.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Amen.
Yeah.
Amen.
Okay.
No, it's important.
Okay. So they had some reference of how to treat all human beings then, is that right?
And then the school had people from other countries too, so it was the national school too.
Okay. And you stayed there for 2 years?
2 years, yes.
And you, Now let me ask you something. If you were to do it all over again, having your experience now, knowing about different Christian schools and all, would you have done it the same way?
I would say yes right off the bat, but I'm going to tell you this. I learned more about my relationship with God outside of the classroom than I did inside the class. The education that I got from walking with God, talking with God, knowing how to listen and to hear and obey his voice was insurmountable compared to the information that I got in the classroom. Now, I enjoy the information that I got in the classroom, but that relationship education that I got,
Wow.
Hello?
Yes,
yeah.
We're here with
we're
you.
Still here.
Okay. So I guess you're saying you're breaking up a little bit, Brother Corbin.
Oh, okay.
You with us?
Yeah,
okay.
I'm still with you. I'm using line and the phone's battery running out on me. So I switched phones.
Okay.
So it will be okay.
Okay.
I want you to complete your thought, Brother Corbin. You said the lessons that you learned outside of the classroom, and then you broke off. I want you to complete that thought, please.
So the lessons that I learned outside of the classrooms are invaluable. I mean, you're not going to learn that in the school. There's no book that you can pick up and read and get that. It's walking with God. Learning to obey.
So let me ask you this. How was you able to transpose that experience in coming back again because you're here now? I don't know if you went somewhere else geographically before you ended up back here in Washington, D.C. And how was that transposed with your experience to come back to Washington, D.C., And tell us from there when you did come back, was your opportunity that you had to go to another school, divinity, or did you start working in your ministry in a church setting?
So I think the biggest lesson that was learned, so my first year at Rhema, I wasn't married, but for my second year, Elder Jenkins and I got married, and then we went back to Oklahoma for my second year. And I believe everything that I learned during my first year for my walk with God was for me to bring and educate Jinky the same way, because Jinky is the only child. She lived with her mother until we got married, and so she had an education with God to go to. And I don't think we both could go through it at the same time.
Wow. All righty, so that is the music. We're going to bump out, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to get into the puppet ministry with our very special guest, Brother Leonard Corbin. Ms. Renee.
Well, we want to thank our sponsor, Big Bad Wolf, a Primo pet store located in the Northwest Washington, D.C. They carry raw, organic, and premium foods. If your dog needs it, they probably have it. They have store-to-door deliveries in the DMV, so give them a call at 202-747-3434. Again, that number is 202-747-3434.
We have 1 week in plugin.
You are listening to Sight and Vision, Disability, and Senior Talk Radio. We're heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. Back over to Reverend Radio Ray and our very special guest, Brother Leonard Corbin.
Also brought to you by St. Didymus Church of and for Persons with Disability, where Brother Reverend Ray Razor is the senior pastor. And if you want to know more information, please call 301-377-6468. All right, we're going to go back to our special guest, Brother Leonard Corbin. Brother Corbin, so once you got back, you and now your new bride, Sister Jinky, what type of employment did you have? Because I know you didn't come back here like you went to Oklahoma and didn't have a place to stay. I can't imagine both of y'all were sitting on the bench back here in D.C. So from that point, how did you plant your flag and where and became gainfully employed?
A couple of years I had odd jobs doing this and that, doing night security and stuff like that, and eventually God opened the door for the church that we were attending to hire me full time.
Amen.
And that was full gospel.
Was that in
AME.
Oklahoma?
No, that was here. Oklahoma? That was here.
Oh, that was here. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. The late Reverend John Cherry was the pastor at Full Gospel AME Zion Church.
Right.
I became employed there.
Oh, so we know him well. Know him well. Now, what ministry was you a part of as an employee there?
I was in the Christian school. I started out as the K-5 classroom assistant, and then I became the computer teacher, and then I became the afternoon after school care coordinator.
You mean taking care of little kids and stuff?
Well, I had everybody. I was
the
coordinator for everybody until their parents came and got to pick them up.
I relate a lot to an after school coordinator. I also ran an after school program. And so I am sitting over here champing at the bit because I want to get to content. And so I want to ask you, because one of my passions is puppetry, I wanted to ask you, how did you get into puppets?
So that's an interesting question. It goes back to when I was 13 years old.
Huh.
And I was at home from school. And PBS or used to play Sesame Street in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was watching Sesame Street, I said to myself, I want to learn how to do that.
Mm.
And it Yes, and it stuck with me until I got married. And one day I looked at Jinky and I told her the same thing I said, I want to learn how to do this. And so she said, okay. So we went, we signed up for some classes to learn how to do it. And this September will be 29 years that we've been doing this.
Wow.
Congratulations. Wow.
And you know, it's hard to share your dream with somebody because sometimes they have a tendency to rain on your parade. But anybody that could go to Oklahoma with no place to live, you all are out on the tightrope a lot of times. So you actually had training. How much training did you have? And do you have to do voices in order to be a puppeteer?
A good puppeteer does voices, but you don't have to. My children never wanted to learn how to do it, and I couldn't do everything because I did most of them myself. But my children and my wife never wanted to do them, so we had to pre-record our stuff.
Okay.
But they are, and I'm bragging on my family, but it's also the truth. They are some of the best puppeteers you want to see.
Oh, right.
Wow.
Now do you always see your target audience as cross-generational? Because a lot of times when we think puppets, we think the Muppets, whom I love. I agree with you. I think they've taken puppetry to a whole nother level. But and they appeal to a cross-section. I have talked to so many people who are recent immigrants to the country and tell me that they learned to speak English watching Sesame Street. So my question to you is, do you always see your audience as cross-generational or do you target it for younger people?
So it has been our experience that everybody likes to laugh. Everybody.
Yeah.
Whether they're old, young, or anything. Now, it just so happens that We try to do stuff that's funny, and we try to bring in whatever point, like if when someone hires us, we do custom shows, and so whatever the emphasis, we try to make our show funny, bringing out the emphasis that they want.
Okay, let's explore that a little bit. So when someone calls you to book a puppet show, and you discuss what point of view you will present. So give us a for instance, you are being asked to come and do a show for seniors. What, and I don't mean seniors in high school, seniors. Tell me what your thought process is.
I'll give you an example. We were asked to go to a senior center, and you know that's where seniors during the daytime are meeting together. And so they asked us to come. Now, when we walked in, I could hear the seniors saying to themselves, "A puppet show, a puppet show." So here's the thing that we deal with all the time. People have a concept of a puppet show with sock puppets, and that's what they think we're going to do. But see, when we roll in with our ATA trunks and our stage and our one, they really get the idea that this ain't no sock puppets.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to this place in Washington, D.C., and Southeast Washington, D.C., and I could hear the seniors saying, puppets, puppets. Well, by the time we left, they were cheering for us. Because what we did, I played music that took them back to the 50s and the 60s and invited them to get up and involved. So they were getting cardio, and they didn't even know it. And then we brought out hula hoops and took them back to see who could do the hula hoop the longest and whatnot. So we're engaging them. And they don't even know that they're being engaged. You know what we're trying.
We're trying to get
some cardio exercise because sometimes when we get up there, we don't want to move. But they were moving and they were laughing And they were, by the time we finished, they were asking, when could we be back? Now, another time,
Oh, wow. We
went to a nursing home, and we had the puppets do a play about healing. And we had the puppets, we were going around, the puppets were laying hands on the people and praying. And by the time we, everybody wanted the puppet to come and pray for them.
Here's a nice
Wow.
Now you mean that is special.
Yeah.
Now that takes us to the name of your puppet ministry, and it's called Ebony Sunshine, but Sunshine is spelled S-O-N-S-H-I-N-E. Explain the significance of that to us.
So when we introduce ourselves as Ebony Sunshine Puppets, shining the light of the sun from an ebony perspective. That's what we do. So the light that we're shining is God's sun light from an ebony perspective. Our puppets are black. Most of our puppets are black. We had more before we had the puppets stolen, so what we wanted to do is for when we came to churches or schools or whatever, we wanted the black kids to see black faces, black puppets, because
right.
So many companies, some of the other puppet organizations in this area have all animals or they're all white. They don't have black puppets. So that's what we wanted to do.
Well, now, I really can appreciate the puppetry because Miss Renee went through a phase where she was a puppeteer and she did, and they use puppets to talk about bullying. So I know, you know, what it is to go being a puppeteer, and we went to a church where they had a strong emphasis, and it was a white church in Virginia, and they strong emphasis on puppetry, and I did not realize puppets cost that kind of money because Mr. Nate bought some puppets, and I did not realize puppets cost that kind of money. Brother Corbin, is there a puppet season, or do you all, like now, you in the ministry, that's not an 8 to 9, that's not an 8 to 5 or 9 to 4 job. That's 24/7 because people in the ministry, they have people pulling on them all the time to pray for them, to something. So is there a puppet ministry season for you all that you all have come to agree to, you and your wife, Sister Jinky, or whenever someone call you, you set it up, or is there a puppet ministry season for you?
Well, prior to the pandemic, that we usually, our season was the summertime because a lot of summer camps or VBS, Vacation Bible Schools, would invite us and whatnot to do things with. So we're still trying to find our way as to what we're going to look like after the pandemic. But we did, during the pandemic, start something that we called a quarantine puppet squad, where when people would call to book us, we would do a Zoom version of what we were doing. And we had schools as far away as Pennsylvania. And Richmond.
Wow.
I was going to ask you, with the new normal in everybody's life and all, in Pepper Street, I imagine they have, like any other activity, a puppetry trade union where they show the new puppets, or puppet people get together and talk about new technique and all that kind of thing. So are you part of any that type of organized group where, you know, I don't know about the new puppet coming out, and that's our break, and we're going to come back on the other side. But I'd like you to tell us a little bit about the industry. I would appreciate that. All right, Ms. Renee, bump out, bump in.
Yes, sir. You have been listening to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. Our guests, you never outgrow puppets. They can share the truth. They can teach lessons or just be. And our guest, Brother Leonard Corbin, breathes life and meaning into his puppet troupe, Ebony Sunshine. Back over to our host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and our special guest.
All righty, Brother Corbin. So is there a puppet industry?
So we were the National Capital Alliance of Puppetry. We haven't attended meetings in years, but we were also a part of the National Christian Fellowship of Puppetry, and we haven't. But they do have events. As a matter of fact, one is going on this week. I don't remember where it is. I think it's somewhere in Maryland. But yeah, they have them. And when my kids were younger, we used to go and so they could see the expanse of puppetry and other ideas. My baby child at one time was interested in enrolling in Connecticut because Connecticut teaches puppetry as a major.
Wow.
Really?
The University of Maryland used to do it because that's where Jim Henson
yeah.
was a student
right.
there
right.
when he invented Kermit the Frog. So they used to have a class. They don't have one anymore.
Well, let me jump in here and ask you a question. You talk about puppetry being a family affair, and you've alluded to the children and that they are now adults. How many children at one time were working in the puppet ministry with you and your wife, and what are they doing with puppets now?
So we had, including my children, we had 10 people at one time. And that's at the time when Six Flags invited us to do something for 3 days at their Six Flags America Park.
Wow.
Okay.
And so we got, we taught kids how to do puppetry, and they all learned. Some of them still know how to to do it. And when we do, just like 2 years ago when we did our grand return, some of them came back and did our Christmas program. But most of them have long forgotten how to do it. But we still have a couple that we can call on when we need help.
Wow!
So let me ask you. Say this September, you're going to be celebrating your 29th year with Puppetry.
Yes.
So you have a year to work on your 30th anniversary. Are you all going to be a do a big thing then? I would hope so, because we're certainly going to put you on our calendar to cover that. But are you all planning and thinking about doing something special for your 30th year?
It's in the back of my mind. I haven't even really revealed them to my wife, so I guess I shouldn't say too much of what it is.
Okay. Miss Renee, our listening audience, you heard it first. Breaking news.
I would just be remiss to ask you about that.
Yeah.
Do you have any favorite stories from your puppetry life?
Oh.
That you could share with us, this family listening audience.
None comes to mind right now. I'm looking at my wife. I'm see if she can come up with something.
If she can come up with what?
Oh, well, I'll tell you the story about how we lost our puppets.
Lost them? They ran away?
Well, they were invited to run away.
Okay, share that with us.
small white trailer that we parked in front of our house, which every time we would have a show, we would empty the contents out of the trailer and bring them into the house. Well, this one, I think it was May when they were taken. Well, we did a show and we were tired and we left everything in the trailer. And I went outside, the trailer was gone.
The trailer was gone?
The whole trailer was gone.
Oh.
And so all of our equipment, I called the police. And I didn't realize how much equipment we had accumulated. We had our equipment insured, but we didn't have it all of it insured, because as we got stuff, we didn't let them know that we had more stuff. So come to find out, we had about $20,000 worth of equipment stolen, not knowing it.
Wow.
And
that had to be
our insurance company was only able to cover about $10,000. A friend of mine, a pastor friend of mine, heard about what was going on, and he put together, he said, I'm going to do this for you all. We're going to have a fundraiser at my church where we can raise some money to make you whole again. And so he did that for us. And we were able to raise at least $5,000. That's the first time I had been to an event where people who we didn't know were giving amounts like $100, $500, $600. Some people pledged $1,000. I had never been to an event where people was giving money like didn't know us. Some people came because they heard. Some people came because somebody said, come on, you need to be a part of this and whatnot and all. And then the outpouring of people on Facebook who were from the puppet community donated puppets that they weren't using anymore and all and whatnot. So we had a great outpouring.
Wow.
That is a great story. How long did it take you all, Brother Corbin, to get back up on your feet in terms of doing performances again or doing puppet shows?
Well, that year, that the December of that year, I think that was 2019 or 18 that they were stolen. That December, we did a grand return. So we did a Christmas program. And we had a two-hour Christmas program, and we had a lot of people to show up. We had vendors to show up. We had popcorn and hot dogs and drinks and whatnot.
Wow.
And so we were able to recoup not everything, but most of what we lost.
Wow. Now, you're saying you all are not vocalizing with the puppets and you know, wearing the black outfit and all that stuff and the mask and everything. So do you pre-record the shows yourself? Do you do the pre-recording?
We have the ability to do that if necessary.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Most times we just get a... We're either doing it live ourselves, because every now and then I can talk my wife into doing something. And my youngest son has come around to, he said as long as he can use his own voice, he doesn't mind doing it. He doesn't want to do a character.
Do a character voice. Now, how many, you keep referring to your sons, how many children do you have?
I have three sons. Please.
My three sons.
One of the daughter every time.
Okay. So the black version of my three sons. Oh, okay.
Yes.
Oh, good. So how
you know,
long you plan to stay? Go ahead, Ms. Renee.
Well, I just wanted to ask you, you were talking about your son doing a regular voice and that kind of thing, and we talked about multi-generational puppets. Do you also reflect, and I know they're black puppets, but do you also reflect what our society is looking at now, like able-bodied or even multicultural. Is that ever a consideration for you?
Yeah, like I say, we try to customize shows to whatever people ask. And a lot of times, especially when we're going into schools or something like that, they ask us, can we present them with something that speaks to those kind, types of issues?
Yeah, because when you talk about black children seeing themselves reflected in all kinds of social media and cultural arts, you know, the thing oftentimes children with disabilities don't see themselves a lot of times reflected. So I know that puppet makers are catching up with a lot of those kind of things, and I just wondered if your shows reflected that.
Hello. Hi, Ms. Renee and Reverend Red Razor. This is,
how are you
doing? Yes, this is Jackie Corbin. This is the wife. And I want to ask your question, Ms. Renee, right quick, and that is, our puppets don't try to reflect the cross gender in terms of we have done where we have a two-handed puppet that has to be done with two hands, so that means two people. And so what we can do is take one of the arms and pull it back so the puppet looks like it has a disability. It's missing an arm. So we have done things like that. We do have a puppet that has lost his eye that I can't find, and I don't know how to place it back, so he has a patch over his eye. For the seniors, we have two senior citizen puppets with gray hair, and they will come out when you're talking about doing seniors. So they will get some numbers to talk and things of that sort. So, yes, we do try to go towards whatever the vendor is looking for. We try our best to make sure that we come in line with them.
Wow, wow, wow. Well, thank you, Sister Jenkins. We're glad that you jumped in there and let us be known that when he kept saying he had a wife named Jinky, that it wasn't somebody, he was a puppet or something that he had in
mind. No, I'm not a
puppet. Thank you. Well, thank you very much. And the next time we have you on, which we will again, because this has really been enlightening and entertaining and then informative. Sister Jinka, we hope we have you on for the whole hour because you have added to it. And Brother Corbin, we thank you so much. And this is going to close our show. Ms. Renee, cut that music right there off. Cut that music off, please.
All right.
Okay. Cut that music. Can you cut it?
There it is.
Alexa, play My Puppet.
I'm Your Puppet by James and Bob Kirikoff on Amazon.
So we're going to close out with I'm Your Puppet. So Pat, Brother Corbin, anything you like to say before we leave, a nugget or something to our listening audience?
I do like to thank you for the invitation, and I'm going to let my wife give you the information, contact information that you can contact us.
We appreciate it.
If you want to hear any more about us, you can go to www.ebony. EBONY Sunshine, that's S-O, that's a O now, S-O-N, Shine, S-H-I-N-E, all one word, ebonysunshine.org.
All right, and we do record this show, and we put it on our website, and we have many people that go on to our website, and with Ms. Renee, we'll give that information now. And they can still hear the show, and they can pull the information, and we always send a copy of the show to our guests if they have a website that they can put it on as a testimonial. And we thank the both of you very much, and God bless you. Thank you, Brother Corbin. Thank you, Sister Jinky. God bless you all. Thank you.
God bless you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for coming on. We really enjoyed this.
All righty. So that, you know, it might have took us a couple of years to to reply to the request of our audience, Alexa, stop playing. I love that song. I'm your so I think that was an appropriate ending. So anyway, Ms. Renee, I am so glad that we did get a chance to talk about puppetry, and that was a very, 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 I think, good interview with Brother Corbin and his wife, Sister Jenkins. And Mr. Nay is going to give you the information when you want to listen to this show time after time after time after time. And I like to say, as my time is up, we thank you for your time. Until the next time, this is Reverend Ray, and I like to say, I might not have sight, but I can have vision, vision, vision. God bless and be blessed.
You have been listening to Sight and Vision, Disability, and Senior Talk Radio. Have any idea for a show? Contact us in all the usual ways. Email us at snvradioshow@gmail.com. Those are the letters snvradioshow@gmail.com. Or call us at 301-377-6468. Want to listen to a past show? Type in the address bar, disabilityoneradio.com. That's disabilityoneradio.com. You can get the information about our guest, ebonysunshine.org, on our website. See you here next Friday at 3 o'clock.